Chapter 19 PSYOPs. The fabric of South Vietnamese society, always loosely knit, began to unravel in 1969. As prospects for a clear-cut military victory for either side slipped away, psychological operations became the weapon of choice in what was an increasingly political war. Both sides played the Psywar game. Its only rule? Post your own score. The insurgents scored the first points in June 1969 when they formed the Provisional Revolutionary Government, PRG, to represent them in South Vietnam and at the negotiating table in Paris. The PRG was immediately recognized by 13 communist bloc and 10 non-aligned nations, mostly Arab. Support was expressed as well by Scandinavian, African, and Latin American countries. 1 month later, COSVN issued Resolution 9 directing its officers to prepare political cadre to ensure a capability to govern in anticipation of a coalition government in South Vietnam. Liberation committees were made subordinate to the PRG and were renamed Revolutionary Committees. At the village and hamlet level, the insurgency was reinvigorated. Back at CIA headquarters in Washington, it was recognized that there were sufficient communist forces to keep the war going, and progress depended on the morale and determination of the communists. Morale, however, is intangible, so CIA propagandists cited irrefutable statistical evidence as proof that the VCI was losing, not gaining, as was the reality, support in the villages. In April 1969, HES reports indicated that more than three-quarters of all Vietnamese were living in secure villages. The purported success was attributed to VCI manpower shortages caused by aerial and artillery bombardment, defoliation campaigns, forced relocations, and mass arrests. The VCI was said to be collecting less tax money as a result of Phoenix and, out of desperation, to be using as cadre children who were too young to be issued IDs. But the bulk of manpower shortages, the Phoenix 1969 end-of-year report claimed, were caused by deserters who rallied to the GVN. In Vinh Long and Sa Dec provinces, it said, manpower shortages at district, village, and hamlet levels ranged from 45 to 100% during 1969. Unable to cope with the GVN accelerated pacification campaign, VCI members by late November 1969 had fled to areas of sparse population and even Cambodia, where they could exert little influence over the population. From the language of the Phoenix report, one could easily think that the few VCI members who had not defected were hiding in Cambodia. But the author of The Truth About Phoenix, whose area of operations included Sa Dec and Vinh Long provinces, claims that most Chu Hoys simply regurgitated the American line in order to win amnesty, make a quick visit to their families, enjoy a few home-cooked meals, then return to the fray fat and rested. Legitimate Chu Hoys, on rights, were pariahs who were not accepted back in their villages, while other Chu Hoys were trained by the VC to infiltrate the program and become spies. In any event, from 1967 onwards, all rallied VCI members were included in Phoenix neutralization statistics, and by 1969, more than 100,000 defectors had been processed through 51 Chu Hoy centers. The Chu Hoy program was managed from 1966 until March 1969 by Ogden Williams, then turned over to Eugene P. Babel, a career CIA officer who had served with Ralph Johnson in the Flying Tigers. Evan Parker stated that Chu Hoy offered more satisfaction than Phoenix, and Chu Hoy, said Jim Ward, was a great program, well done. Ward explained that most Chu Hoy advisors were from the U.S. Information Service, although some were State Department or military officers. But they wouldn't have more than one American advisor in a province and, Ward added, it was usually the Vietnamese operating at district level. Upon arriving at the Chu Hoy Center, the defector was interviewed and, if he had information on the VCI, was sent to the PIC. If he had tactical information, he was sent to military interrogators. Next came political indoctrination, lasting from 40 to 60 days, depending on the individual. They had a formal course, said Ward. They were shown movies and given lectures on democracy. Upon graduation, each was given an ID card, a meal, some money, and a chance to repent. Political indoctrination was handled by defectors who said they had been well treated by the Americans and had decided it was better to live for a free Vietnam than to die for the totalitarian North Vietnamese. Chu Hoi had lots of guys who had been with the enemy before, Ward continued, who knew how to talk to these people and would persuade them to join the territorial forces or the PRU. Others joined armed propaganda teams, which went back into VC territory to contact Viet Cong families and recruit more Viet Cong defectors. The great thing about the Chu Hoi program, Ward noted, is that we didn't have to put people in jails or process them through the judicial system, which was already overcrowded. You could talk to the Chu Hois when you brought them in, talk to them about what the government was doing for the people. They'd say, "But it's a crooked government." You'd say, "Wait a minute, the government's providing seeds for rice. This enables us to grow 3 to 4 times as much rice in the Delta as in the past. Now that's good." The guide'd say, "I didn't know that." All they'd hear from the communists were the contradictions they'd devise, if they didn't already exist. But now he was getting the picture from our side, and a lot of them would flip-flop because of it. Now some guys would come in, Chu Hoi, spend time with their families, then go back out in the field again. That happened, but not to the extent that you might think. I'd say less than 10%. Despite his praise for the Chu Hoi program, Jim Ward said that Americans should have been targeted only against the North Vietnamese and left the South Vietnamese forces to handle the insurgency, even though such a strategy would have precluded Phoenix. However, having made the mistake of military intervention, Americans looked for psychological ploys, other than an appeal to nationalism to win people over to the GVN. High on the list were bounty programs. The Phoenix 1969 end-of-year report cites, as an example, Kien Phong Province, where the Phung Hoang Committee printed and had distributed a wanted poster featuring photographs of 8 members of the Khao Lan City Sapper Unit. While a RD cadreman was tacking up a poster, he saw one of the members passing by, the report says. He called the police, who arrested the suspect. 2 other members were later arrested. 3 were induced to rally, claiming they were rendered ineffective having their names and faces known. In Phung Dinh Province, the Vietnam Information Service, VIS, broadcast the names of VCI through loudspeakers mounted on sampans while traveling through the canals of Phung Hiep District. While the team was conducting the operation, a village-level VCI cadre walked into the Phung Tuan DIOCC, saying he had to rally because Phung Hoang must know about him if the members of the District Revolutionary Committee were known to Phung Hoang, as broadcast by VIS. No one wanted to find his name on a Phoenix blacklist. It meant the PRU would creep into his hooch some night, or black helicopters would swoop down on his village. And because fear of Phoenix was an effective means of creating informers and defectors, an intensive publicity campaign called the Popular Information Program began in October 1969. Under the banner of protecting the people from terrorism, U.S. and GVN Cywar teams crisscrossed the countryside, using Phoenix-supplied radios, leaflets, posters, TV shows, movies, banners, and loudspeakers mounted on trucks and sampans to spread the word. Using the Eye of God technique, taped broadcasts were pitched at specific VCI members. A typical broadcast would say, "We know you, Nguyen Van Nguyen. We know where you live. We know you are a communist traitor, a lackey of Hanoi who illegally collects taxes in Vinh Tang Hamlet. Soon the soldiers and police are coming for you. Rally now, Nguyen Van Nguyen. Rally now, while there is still time." So important were PSYOPs that the Phoenix Directorate produced a 30-minute movie explaining how Phoenix helps protect the people from terrorism. A copy of the film was sent to each province for use on local TV stations and in movie theaters. Writes Phoenix coordinator John Cook, "The concept was simple. In practice, it was suicidal." Suicidal, he explains, because the VC found the lightly armed PSYOPs teams easy targets. Cook, therefore, used the PSYOPs teams as bait to flush out the VC, whom he then ambushed with his Phoenix task force. In this way, PSYOPs were transposed into combat operations, turning psychological defeat into military victory, with a body count to boot. In addition to the Phoenix movie, hundreds of thousands of copies of an illustrated booklet describing the Phung Hoang program in cartoon format were also distributed throughout Vietnam, in Montagnard and Cambodian dialects as well, with the goal of placing 10 to 15 in each hamlet. Culture drama teams used the booklet as a scenario for skits. On January 22, 1970, 38,000 of these leaflets were dropped over three villages in Govap district. Addressed to specific VCI members, they read, "Since you have joined the NLF, what have you done for your family or your village and hamlet? Or have you just broken up the happiness of many families and destroyed houses and land? Some people among you have been awakened recently. They have deserted the communist ranks and were received by the GVN and the people with open arms and family affection. You should be ready for the end if you remain in the communist ranks. You will be dealing with difficulties bigger from day to day and will suffer serious failure when the ARVN expands strongly. You had better return to your family where you will be guaranteed safety and help to establish a new life." PSYOP's leaflets stressed traditional Confucian values of obedience to authority and family and portrayed the communists as a socially disruptive force that could be stopped only by Phoenix. But the fact that the GVN could reach the people only through media like leaflets and loudspeakers indicates how far removed it was from the reality of life in rural villages. As On notes in Truth About Phoenix, while the GVN relied upon cartoon books to sell itself to a largely illiterate people, the VC goes from person to person talking to ears, proving that technology was no substitute for human contact. Consequently, in 1969, the Phoenix Directorate directed Fung Huang Province Committees to expand the Hamlet Informant Program, HIP, drastically. District chiefs were instructed to conduct classes on GVN programs, progress, potential, and ideology for residents who had VCI relatives or leanings. There was a one-week course with extensions for problem individuals. Daycare and lunch were made available in vacated homes. Chohoi was emphasized, counseling was provided, and insofar as the goal was the neutralization of VCI, the populace was encouraged to report the activities of the VCI by dropping a note addressed to the police in local mailboxes. This method was credited with approximately 40% of the information used in Fung Huang operations in Ding Tuong province. PSYOPs in support of Phoenix became such a potent weapon in the attack on the VCI that in August 1970, SACSA described Phoenix as the number one MACV PSYOPs priority. 4 months later, John Mason reported, "There have been more than 12 million leaflets, posters, banners, and booklets printed and distributed throughout Vietnam in support of the program." Despite the emphasis on PSYOPs, combat operations were still preferred by the military officers managing the Phoenix program in the field. Such operations most often began at the hamlet level, when paid informers reported to Vung Tau-trained village chiefs, who then mobilized territorial forces under their command and advised by American military officers against VCI suspects. Likewise, unilateral American Phoenix operations usually began with informants feeding names to a DIOCC, whose advisor then informed the counterintelligence section of the nearest American outfit. An operation was then mounted. In the wee hours of the morning, a unit of infantrymen would be deployed around the village to provide security, and a team of commandos would snatch the VCI suspect and bring him or her to the Military Intelligence Interrogation Center. Such was the standard procedure which involved the average American soldier in Phoenix operations. CIA paramilitary officers also continued to mount unilateral Phoenix operations via their PRU advisors. As reported in the December 1986 issue of Soldier of Fortune magazine, Long An PRU advisor Captain Frank Thornton circumvented orders not to accompany his PRU into the field by putting his name on the sealed attachment alpha roster for administrative purposes, and Saigon never knew the difference. A combat enthusiast, Thornton obtained intelligence on the location of VCI members from a PRU agent net comprised of old women, kids, and former ARVN soldiers who'd lost arms and legs fighting the VC. To ensure security, he rarely passed along his intel products other than to SEALs. On October 11, 1969, Thornton's agents reported a district-level VCI meeting in Konjuk District. Putting two SEALs and four PRU in a Cobra Killer helicopter for backup, Thornton climbed into a light observation Hunter chopper, flew to a point near the target area, got out, and alone, just as Elton Manzioni had done 5 years earlier, slipped into the VCI's hooch, grabbed him, and radioed for extraction. The man he snatched, Pham Van King, was the commanding officer of four VC battalions. The mission garnered Thornton a Vietnamese Cross of Gallantry awarded by Rungsat Special Zone PRU Commander Major Nguyen Hyuk. Thornton's heroic deed was the exception, however, not the rule. In The Phoenix Murders, Joseph Treister quotes an American captain who spent 3 years advising PRU teams. Unless somebody made a mistake, you're not going to find a guy alone. And if you go in and try to tangle with a whole village, you're in deep. If the guy is important, it's very hard to extract him. This captain recalled only one case where the PRU targeted a specific individual, a VC district official in a province on the Cambodia border. It was the man's wedding day. He was marrying the daughter of a GVN village official, and the PRU burst into the room yelling for everyone to freeze. But, the captain told Treister, some VC in the wedding party goes for his gun and our guy opens up. The next two or three guys through the door open up too, and the first thing you know, there's a lot of blood on the sand. So that didn't work too well. We didn't lose anybody, but there were 22 people in the wedding party, and 20 were killed. A typical district-level Phoenix operation, cited in the 1969 year-end report, began when Deputy Party Secretary Dung was caught in a tunnel. During interrogation, Dung informed on his comrades, who were captured along with incriminating documents. One of them revealed during his interrogation that the district party chairman, Nguyen Van Kia, was a horse cart driver. PRU teams were stationed at the main traffic intersection in Kia's area of operations. He was caught the same day without a fight. Four other cadre members were snatched in their homes. The next target was Nguyen Thi Ba, the message section chief. A description of her route of travel was furnished by the DIOCC. The PRU posed as VC and set up an ambush along her usual route. On the second evening of the trail watch, Ba was captured. Province-level Phoenix operations, like the following one in Long Cang, tended to be more elaborate. In this case, the operation developed when the province chief assigned the job of resources control to the Phoenix coordinator and his Phoenix task force. In response, the Phoenix coordinator mounted three concurrent long-term operations lasting 2 months. Part one was the establishment of mobile resource control checkpoints. 3 6-man teams, 2 national and 2 field policemen and 2 PRU, were assigned to checkpoints. The National Police provided trucks. Blacklists came from the special branch. Roadblocks were set up. And while the National Police checked IDs and the field police stood guard, the PRU searched and detained suspects, who were carted off to the pick for interrogation. Part 2 occurred in 3 phases. First, a special Air Mobile Resource Control, SARC, team was formed to interdict VCI commerce. Next, under the command of the Phoenix coordinator and his interpreter, a search element consisting of 2 PRU, 3 special branch, and 1 national policeman was formed. A security element was formed of 2 squads from the U.S. 1st Cavalry. Thirdly, the cavalry provided a command and control chopper, a light observation helicopter, LOC, and a Cobra gunship, the traditional hunter-killer team with an added eye in the sky. SARC operations were mounted on the basis of intelligence reports providing targets of opportunity. When a target of opportunity presented itself, the SARC force would galvanize into action, swoop down from the sky, cordon off areas and send in search teams, stop vehicles, and capture and kill VCI members. Part 3, Operation Cutoff, was designed to capture suspects who could produce leads to the VCI. To this end, DIOCC sent lists to the PIOCC where priority targets were selected. After 2 months of preparation, 38 hamlets were targeted. Special Branch provided lists of relatives of the suspects. Territorial Forces and the U.S. 199th Infantry Brigade provided security forces to cordon off each hamlet. Operations began at 4 a.m., with National and Field Police and PRU searching hooches, while a Cywar team broadcast names and instructions over loudspeakers. People were gathered together at a Special Branch processing station, where IDs were checked against blacklists. RD cadre drama teams entertained the innocent while various agencies interrogated suspects, who were then sent to the province interrogation center. By the end of the Long Cang Phoenix campaign, 168 VCI sympathizers had been caught and confined. Although suppliers and supporters were Category C, not genuine VCI, they did inform on their authentic A and B grade comrades. Over the next 3 months, VCI neutralizations in Long Cang soared to their highest levels ever. There was a corresponding rise in Hoi Chang's. A typical Saigon operation began in March 1969, when a People's Intelligence Organization agent submitted a report on Nguyen Noi to the 1st Precinct Special Police. Suspecting Noi of being VCI, the Phoenix coordinator assigned a 6-man surveillance team to watch him. The six special policemen worked in two-man teams, one on foot, one on a bike. In this way, they learned where Noy lived and worked and where his contact points were. The special branch set up agents in business in a soup shop one block away from Noy's house and established a bicycle repair shop near his favorite cafe. Two agents continued to follow him. Three houses Noy frequented were also placed under surveillance. 3 weeks later, Noy was arrested along with several comrades in the safe houses who had leaflets produced by the Saigon Women's Revolutionary Association. During interrogation, Noy informed on his bosses in the party. His testimony led to more arrests, including several cadres in the district party committee. One member was enticed to work for the police and went back to the party committee as a penetration agent. He stayed there 3 months in his former position, secretly channeling information to the special branch, which led to more arrests. As the 1969 Phoenix end-of-year report notes, before allowing their penetration agent to be freed, special police personnel took photos of the agent enjoying himself in the company of other special police agents and required him to sign a sworn statement that he was in fact working for the GVN. These documents would find their way back to the VC if the agent did not cooperate with the police in the future. A surveillance team was assigned to watch the agent's activities as an added precautionary measure. So successful was Phoenix in 1969 that the directorate boasted in its end-of-year report that the first generation of COSVN military proselytizers has been reduced to 7 personnel. In supporting its claims of success at every level, the report quotes a high-ranking VCI who described COSVN Resolution 9 as a desperate VC plan written in an attempt to save an otherwise hopeless political and military situation. He said that the Fung Huang, Phoenix program, has been given top priority for destruction by the VC. One could deduce from this that the GVN stood on the verge of a great victory, but the view from the field was not so rosy. As Phoenix advisor Wayne Cooper said to Joseph Treister, "A typical DIOCC would have been an impossible clutter, with wheat and chaff filed together. The alphabetical files we insisted they keep would not be cross-referenced by alias, family location, or any other useful designation. The dossiers, so vital to Province Security Committee prosecution, would contain poor, sketchy information, perhaps enough for an operation, but not enough for prosecution. Other files, most wanted lists, potential guide files, mugshots, and so on, were maintained so poorly as to be useless, or never kept at all. There would be no intelligence collection plan, and agents receive little direction." Ralph Johnson agrees with Cooper's dismal assessment of special branch capabilities. DIOCC files on VCI personalities did not reflect much progress toward Fung Huang intelligence objectives, he writes. He also contradicts Colby's statement that we were getting more and more accurate reports from inside VCI provincial committees and regional party headquarters from brave Vietnamese holding high ranks in such groups. Says Johnson, "The special branch rarely, if ever, managed to recruit agents who had access to high-level VCI planning." He adds that the GVN arrested suspected agents and attempted to destroy VCI organizations instead of surveilling or recruiting agents in place for long-term exploitation. The result was that most VCI captured were low-level in the province or below, and most intelligence was generated and exploited from counter-guerrilla operations, casual walk-in informants, captured VCI, VCI caught in resource control operations, captured documents, cordon and search operations, and especially Choi Hoi defectors from VCI. With the transition of Phoenix to Cords, a new and improved means of judging, evaluating, and proving success was needed. Hence Big Mac, an instructive type document that directs the territorial intelligence system to quantitatively and qualitatively evaluate the VCI and lower-level military units. Big Mac reported on the number of identified and unidentified VCI members, their influence in the area, and their identity by position for inclusion in the Green Book. Compiled monthly by U.S. military advisors without Vietnamese input, Big Mac reflected the military's emphasis on operations against enemy military units, the type that resulted in big body counts. "It was a reporting requirement that could choke a mule," recalled Colonel Doug Dillard, "to the point of designing data entry sheets to feed the computer in Saigon. I met with Ted Grayman, and we coordinated with other staff members, and we came to the conclusion that if we implemented Big Mac, we would stop pursuing the war and start reporting on it. But the Saigon bureaucracy prevailed and," Dillard sighed, "we began implementing portions of Big Mac. By the end of 1969, Big Mac reports were pouring into Saigon from South Vietnam's 250 districts. A comparison with the statistics from 1968 shows the number of captured VCI decreased, while the number of VCI killed more than doubled. Captured, 1968, 11,288. 1969, 8,515. Killed, 1968, 2,229. 1969, 4,832. Railed, 1968, 2,259. 1969, 6,187. Total, 1968, 15,776. 1969, 19,534. Within this total, 4,007 VCI security agents were cited as having been neutralized, 3 COSVN-level VCI, 64 regional VCI, 226 from provinces, 881 from districts, 235 from cities, 2,081 from villages, and 511 from hamlets. An estimated 74,000 VCI were still at large, but overall neutralizations were up, and the directorate boasted that 60% were A and B priority targets. Meanwhile, the VCI in 1969 had murdered 6,000 GVN officials and ordinary citizens, had kidnapped 6,000 people, and had wounded 15,000 more. Statistical evidence of success so pleased the Washington Brain Trust that additional computer systems were quickly introduced. In March 1969, the National Police Evaluation System went online, recording police assignment data for analysis and countermeasures. In 1970, Big Mac's bilingual replacement, the Big Mac Special Collection Program, shifted the burden of reporting and accountability to the RVN Territorial Intelligence System. In January 1970, the VCI Neutralization Information System was inaugurated to record all anti-VCI operations. The National Police Criminal Information System, NPCIS, was implemented in April 1970 to track VCI who were held beyond statutory limitations. Designed to interface with the Chu Hoi tracking system, which aided province security committees in the post-apprehension monitoring of released VCI, NPCIS was also compatible with the VCI Neutralization and Identification Information System, which stored in its classified files a history of the VCI member from the time of his identification to his neutralization. Complementing these tracking systems was the National ID Registration Program system. Within 24 hours of arrest, detainees were booked. A report was then sent to the proper Province Intelligence and Operations Coordination Center, and a fingerprint card sent to the National Identity Record Center in Saigon, where a data sheet was plugged into the computer. In the field, nearly 2,000 policemen worked in two shifts, 7 days a week, sending 20,000 documents from the provinces to Saigon every day. By November 1970, more than 7 million laminated fingerprint cards had been classified, searched, and placed in the fingerprint bank for instant access. Climaxing the computer process in January 1971 was the National Police Infrastructure Analysis Subsystem 2, NPS-2, which was used to plan countermeasures against the 73,731 confirmed and suspected VCI still at large, and called logical records in its files. NPS-2 functioned until March 1973 when, with the assistance of technicians from the Computer Science Corporation, it was transferred to the Vietnamese, along with PHMIS and the National Police Identification Follow-up Subsystem, NPI-FUS. Yet another tracking system, NPI-FUS, provided a means of determining the action taken on wanted person notices and statistics on the disposition of wanted person cases. There was even a National Police Directory Table subsystem on national police units and correction centers. However, the reliance on computer systems was a poor substitute for a judicial system based on due process. As Public Safety Officer L.M. Rosen wrote on November 27, 1970, the NPCIS will not of itself improve the administration of justice or the processing of detainees. Further reforms remain to be made.